Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi there. Hey, I've been looking forward to today's interview for a while and for a lot of reasons. My guest today is Ben Jacobs. Ben is a Native American chef, entrepreneur, and founder of Takabe. Did I say that right, Ben?
Takabe.
Beautiful. All right, great. That's the hard part. A Native American restaurant in Denver. He also understands the importance of giving back to the community. Ben, thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Very cool. So we're going to cover a lot, and I want to hear all about your story because it's a very unique, very interesting one. We'll start with Takabe. It's a restaurant you founded with a friend of yours. Tell us about Takabe and the inspiration.
Sure. So I started Takabe with my best friend and business partner, Matthew Chandra. Matt and I actually met the first week of college at the University of Denver, became like attached at the hip ever since. Really, how the story of Takabe is really interesting because Matt and I did not go into culinary. We were not down that path at all, other than working in restaurants. I mean, that's that old story of we were in restaurants all the time. Leaving college, we really just wanted to do something together. And what was it? He was a digital media major and I was a history major. And so we thought about like doing documentary work, but we were not too keen on any of that, trying to figure it out. And Matt actually came out to Oklahoma. So I'm Osage from Northeast Oklahoma, but reside in Denver. So my community is back in Northeast Oklahoma. And so he came out for our ceremony. We were sitting there during kind of one of our feast times before we dance and just talking about the importance of food and talking about native foods and why it wasn't more readily available. And quickly, Matt is actually from a big food background as well. So his father's from Dehradun, Northern India. His mother's Italian. And so he comes from a big food background as well. So we started just talking about the culinary experience, especially from the native perspective. And why is native food not more readily available in outside of an event like we were at, a ceremony, a community organization, a powwow, a family gathering? Why is it not in the culinary conversation in America? And so we decided we wanted to create a restaurant for that experience. Now, my parents had a restaurant called Gray Horse American Indian Eatery that opened in 1989 when we moved to Denver, Colorado. So when we moved here, my parents were kind of had done things in the food industry for years before, had kind of college bars, ice cream parlors, things like that. They created Gray Horse when we moved to Denver because my mother got a job at the Denver Indian Center. So we were immediately ingrained in the native community in Denver. So they operated that for 2 years. That was in 89, and it was counter service. That's what we do. We're a fast casual style restaurant where you order at the counter. You have all your selections in front of you. And my parents had that style. My father was an ex-Marine, and he always called it like a chow line. You go down the chow line, people can see the food, you can interact. And it was really important for them. And then we took that on as well of having that engagement with the person behind the counter. And especially when we opened in 2008, that was the height and the real rise of the fast casual concept, the counter service, stuff like that. And so we kept that model and we just adapted it. They were in a food court. We made its own brick and mortar establishment. So we were able to kind of refine what we were doing, have more of a space that's dedicated to the story and the image and identity we were trying to share. So long-winded to say, that's how Takabe got its start was, you know, through Matt and I sitting and just talking about the culinary experience, but then having my parents' establishment as something that we could take. And I call that our first restaurant. That was our real prototype for what Takabe became.
Very cool. So Matt was not Native American. He's different nationality, right?
Yeah, he is. So since his father's from India and, you know, we're here, we always say we're both Indians, so you can't tell us we're wrong.
That's awesome. Now, did you guys ever work in the restaurants? Did you work in your parents' restaurant at some point in time?
Well, so I was, when that one opened, I was 6. And so okay. I spent a lot of time there. My memories are just the aromas of a kitchen, the aromas of a back alley dumpster and grease traps and putting G.I. Joes in dishwashers. Those are my memories. Yeah. My brother's 10 years older. He did more work there. So I didn't work any of that. But, you know, starting as a late teen, that's when I hit the restaurant industry and did everything from busing to serving to, you know, food running to jumping on the line when we needed. Everything in between other than managing an establishment I had done before we opened our own restaurant.
I love it. So on Fork Tales, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Dan Rowe, the CEO of Fransmart. And they call him the chain maker. He takes an idea, he takes a great concept, and he blows it out and turns it into, you know, multi-unit massive franchises. So, I mean, it was really interesting. And watching some of your videos and looking at the website, it is unique. I mean, American Indian cuisine. I mean, talk about that. What is that? What defines that?
So I love that question, because whenever someone asks me what is Native American cuisine, I don't know. And that's the whole point. Like, that's really where we're at. And I like to say that we're this beautiful experience of the Native culinary world, because we're all so different. There's this idea of the Indian, right? But we're also drastically different dependent on region and tribal community and, you know, with forced relocation, things like that. People bring their different values and traditions and culinary experience to what they do now. And so what is Native American food? What is Native or Indigenous food? I always like to say that we are the oldest cultures on the continent, but in many ways we have the youngest cuisine because it's not clearly defined. Like, you talk about Italian cuisine, it is very down to the regional dish in certain places. Well, we're currently developing that because we're reclaiming and developing. And now that you have cooks and chefs and restaurateurs and caterers, people are starting to define what our food is as a community. And it is very localized in many ways. It's very regional in many ways, but it also has a broader experience because we are so interwoven as a community. A good example I'll tell you quickly is, you know, they're a relocation city. So Denver's a relocation city. So during the Indian Relocation Act throughout the 50s into the 60s, they're bringing Native people from tribal communities for further forced assimilation and ways to extract more land, tribal land, and break up kind of the communal nature of tribal people, bringing them into urban settings. And so Denver's one of those communities, Denver, LA, Chicago, Dallas, New York. But anyways, my point is, Denver has a large Native population. We're from all over. So we have people from different communities, different regions. So we are interwoven as a people as well. That's kind of my point, is we're very tribally specific in who we are and our identities and our values and our traditions. But in many ways, we are a broader community. So it's a community of strength because it is a small number of people.
That's great. Well, and, you know, you have the history. Your buddy's got the marketing side. I mean, you have this opportunity to just own something and create the story. And you don't have to create it. I mean, you obviously know the history, and I'm sure it's a very rich history. What a great opportunity. I mean, you could build this, this concept. And I saw some of the interior of your restaurant, and and, you know, I see what you're doing with the land, the emulating like the clouds and everything like that. Just phenomenal stuff. And I just think you have such a cool opportunity to have a great story and just, you know, find all the different sort of, I don't say the dishes, but just you could get some recipes and things from different areas, different tribes. Yeah. I just think it's you get a great meal, probably have a history lesson at the same time, you know? And I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a big thing for us. You know, when we started, we wanted to create the trend for what a Native restaurant could be in America. What is it? Because there's a handful. There were not a lot of for us to look at. And so we wanted to create a multi-unit. Like, that was our goal. But then we also realized as we were going through this, it's not as easy to open as a burger joint or a pizza place because people don't necessarily know what it is. So it's been a lot of building and teaching and educating, but not like on a boring, dull side, but like for people to come and be like, what am I eating? What is this? What's the wild rice? What's, you know, so it's taken time for that. And we've been able to build now over 16 years. And what I, you know, where we are now is we started with Osage specific recipes. And now I always say that we're ingredient driven. It's kind of what you're saying, you know, is like we source from Native food producers all over the country. So when you come in, you have a unique experience of what we present as food and what our idea is of a Native food experience. But it's all through communities all over the country where we source our ingredients from.
It's fantastic. Very cool. Very cool. So I saw you guys were featured on Diners and Drive-Ins back in 2011. Now, we also work with Guy. Like, we have two of the agencies in the Pavone Group. One is Vigor, which does restaurants, and that's Fork Tales ties in mostly that. But we also have Quench, which is food and beverage, CPG, consumer packaged goods. So we're just working with Guy now on his hot sauce, the Flavortown stuff. So what was it like for you guys? We love working with him. What's it like for you guys to work with him?
Yeah, so we're now like an official OG because we were on in 2010. They came in 2010, 2011, okay. And we were very young as a restaurant when they came. I think we had been open almost a little under 2 years when they came in. And I will tell you this. One guy was amazing. He was so fun. He was engaging. Like with our crew, we have a very young crew. Like he enjoyed being there. You could tell he was into it, spent time. So that was fantastic. But also – you know, afterward, we're a fast casual style restaurant, which in many cases are like on a main and main, like people need to see you. We're tucked in a little neighborhood. And not that clearly the food was good because we're still here 16 years later. No one knew about us. And I will tell you, when we found out from the production team at Triple D, you know, they said, this is like winning the lottery. We're like, all right, well, we'll see. We literally were on the verge of failure, you know, and it wasn't because people didn't know us or didn't like or people didn't know about us. People like the food, but that put us on the map. I mean, that's what saved us is we were behind in rent. I mean, just, it was the restaurant tour experience. We were behind on rent, trying to figure it out. We were 26 years old and we hit that and it like just skyrocketed. So for us, like I will always be grateful for Guy and his entire team, for really just making that, putting us on a platform, you know, and still to this day, it's crazy. To this day, we have people that come in and are like, yo, I saw you guys on Triple D. I saw, you know, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, whatever, 14 years ago at this point.
Excellent. Excellent. His energy is unsurpassed. I mean, he's just a great personality and a really a great marketer and just a great guy. So good stuff. And that's cool. And you know, it's so true. Like when you're an entrepreneur, I think everyone thinks like when you own a restaurant or whatever, you own an agency or a business, everyone thinks, oh, you're lucky. You're your own boss. You make your own hours. You work when you want to, you make lots of money. And it's like, I'm always like, yeah, try it. Cause I mean, I wouldn't trade it for the world. The entrepreneurial journey is one I'm extremely fond of. I'm proud of, but it's not easy. You know, it's a pain tolerance test. So I empathize. I was 27 when I started my company. I empathize about the not paying rent thing. I mean, that's scary, right? You don't know when the next check's coming in, and it's tough stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we were relying on our girlfriends, now wives, to help us with rent and things like that. Just like all the struggles, I agree with you. You know, as people think it's this is amazing. It's so, and there is an amazing sense of freedom. Like, don't get me wrong, that's very cool. But also my sister-in-law said this to me recently and it struck me because she's in the medical profession and she was like on the 7 a.m. phone calls every day for like 3 years. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know how you did that. I have to back out of this. She was like, you don't realize you have been on call every day for 15 years.
Yeah, that's right.
And because when you're so in it and you don't realize, like it's a part of who you are, it's a part of what you do. And I was like, you are right. I get phone calls at 9 a.m. I get phone calls at 10 p.m., you know, and it's anything in between. I realized, oh, you're right. I'm looking at your world and thinking, oh, wow. And you're looking at mine being like, I don't know how you've done it, you know? So, it's a certain type of person that one enjoys it and thrives and excels in the food world, you know, wherever you are in the food system, you know?
Yep. Well, I learned something else here too. I assume that both your wives married you guys because they wanted to make sure they got paid back. Right.
Yeah, that's really what it is. She's still checking those IOUs. Exactly.
That's funny. So look, I ask every restaurant owner this question: what's the best thing on your menu?
Oh man! All right. So I have two favorites. I'm gonna throw it out too.
That's cool.
So one is a ground bison Indian taco. So Indian tacos, piece of fry bread. I like just straight pinto beans on mine. Ground bison, we have an Arcadian blend lettuce, mild cheddar cheese, something that we call Osage hominy salsa, which is hominy, onions, cranberry, cilantro, and a variety of seasonings. And then I do roasted green chilies and I top it with hot sauce. That's me. That's my go-to. That's what I have every time. And then bison ribs, we have an amazing bison rib. So we do bison ribs with rotating either huckleberry, blueberry, or blackberry barbecue sauce. That's like kind of what people come in, the Indian taco or the ribs. Those are my like hands down favorite.
Sounds phenomenal. I was saying to you earlier before we got on too, I'm a big, I love eating bison. I'm a big elk guy. I'm fortunate to have elk meat on hand at all times. Both of those meats are just absolutely delicious and healthy and so good for you. And it's such a great protein to work with. So that's fantastic. So now I want to jump into Seed to Soul a little bit. That's something you're super passionate about and rightfully so. Tell us about what the mission is of Seed to Soul.
So CSOs kind of our overarching work in everything that we do. And so really it's where we're built now is helping support, create, and develop a native specific food system. So there's native food producers all over the country doing amazing things. And for us as a native restaurant and the other things we're doing now, you know, to say that you need to source from native food production. So a couple of things I'll say quickly is where many restaurants are local first, beautiful. We believe in that as well. But for us to be a native restaurant, we need to support the native food system. And since it is so spread out, we can't, it's not that you can always be locally native. And so we say native first, local second. And so we put all of our initial investments into for food, because we have to buy food every week, to native food production. So we source wild rice from the Great Lakes, blueberries from Maine, huckleberries from Washington State, olive oil from California, beans from the Southwest. I mean, you name it, we source from all over the place. That's so awesome. We bring that in. That's how we cook in the restaurant, how we cook moving forward. Now, with that, and to get to, I'll get to your seed to soul, is for me thinking about it, you know, talking with Matt, my business partner, you know, we're saying like the farm to table approach to a restaurant is amazing. But again, we have to step back and think about it, how we see food and where we see ourselves in the system. And we're very good at that, I believe. We're very good at knowing where we fit in the system. And so farm to table to me is, and I know it's more than that, but it's the chef and the farmer. It's the two, the image of those two people, like look at what I grew and look at what I put on a plate. Now that's great. But for us and what we're doing, we need to think about the entire system to create that. And so that's why we say seed to soul. So anything that goes in the soil that grows or anything that eats off of the ground, we have to start there. And then the finishing is not like the farm to table is the table. Now for us, it has to be nourishing. We have to make sure that it feeds people. Now that's anyone in the general community of America, but also like our community specifically, because a mentor and a very good close friend of mine, Mary, always said, food cannot be nutritious if it's not eaten. So how do we make sure that our people are able to eat the food? And so through that, from the seed to the soul, we also have to think about the whole chain. So who picks it, who packs it, who ships it, who unpacks it, who cleans it, who, you know, who preps it, who cooks it, and then how is it then repackaged? How is it given to someone and how are they able to consume it? So for us, it's building that entire chain, that entire system that's incredibly important, that sometimes, again, very generally speaking, if you say farm to table, it's just the experience of the growing and the eating it. And you don't think about all the hands that were a part of it along the way, because what we're really doing right now is focusing on how to support the native food system, but also building economy in our communities, because dollars come and go from native communities instantaneously. And so for us, we can help producers, we can help them grow their system, we can help communities, but also we can build economy in those communities, which is incredibly important to me. So it's a way for us to kind of force the cyclical nature of a relationship of not only feeding people, but also putting dollars back into communities. So saying, last year we bought 10,000 pounds of pinto beans, this year we need 20,000 pounds of pinto beans. Like, it's guaranteed I'm coming back to you, and working through that process to, again, grow. So it's very backwards in many ways, where so many people are focused on like growing their business. We're growing other businesses in order for us to grow, which is kind of opposite of how most business works, but it's incredibly important, again, to build the system. Because again, as we grow, we have to make sure that the supply chain is there for us specifically across the board. So that's like very rapidly trying to tell you what our vision is between the seed to the soul.
It's fantastic. You know, and the thing is, it's a lot to all of this, obviously, but it really does make for a really tight story and a brand. I mean, you have a really cool mission. And look, everyone has to eat. Everyone wants to go to good restaurants. Everyone wants to get good food. But, you know, what a great sort of, I don't say feel good story, but what a great concept. I'm impressed by the whole thing.
Thank you. Can I just say this quickly? Yeah, sorry, just because you said that, I apologize. So like one thing that I always like to get across too to people is you can come into our restaurant or you can get some of our food. And like the goal is for you to just enjoy food and walk out the door if you like. Like that's it. It's no in any way like shoving, you know, no pun intended, shoving anything down your throat. But it's about what we've always been about is like dialogue. So when you come in, you can grub down, have great food and go out like, man, that was awesome. Like you would in any restaurant.
Right.
But also if you're like, hey, what do you guys do here? Tell me about the design. Tell me about the food. Then we are able to talk about it. But at the end of the day, we're restaurateurs, we're food guys. Like it's just eat, enjoy it and go. But behind the scenes, there's very methodical work in planning to get you a great plate of food that you can walk out and just be like, hey man, I enjoyed my lunch. It was awesome.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you said that, but I mean, I just think it's amazing. Again, look, I'm Italian and my wife's Greek. Food is love. I mean, you feed people because you care about them, and your story that behind it all, if people so choose to indulge in it, is a phenomenal one. It's just really, really remarkable. So, I assume you've been around for a long time. I assume the food's pretty darn good. So the ribs sound amazing. So now, Seed to Soul, how does that tie into the Tabaque indigenous marketplace? Like, what is the differences there? How does that all tie together?
Yeah. So, I mean, Seed to Soul is what becomes the marketplace. And so what Matt and I had wanted to do for years was our mission was to open a bunch of restaurants. We wanted to be all over the country, you know, and we still like to get there. We have to build our own supply chain for the restaurants specifically. Obviously COVID hit and then we backtracked and we had to figure out what we were going to do. And I mean, I was not going to sit at a desk. Like I was like, what am I going to do with my life? And the only thing was survival. Like we're going to survive. We're going to find a way to excel and can continue. And kind of, as I said before, we're really good at knowing where we fit in the system. So where people were solving the problem of the day, saying, we got to feed people now. We got to feed people now. I had calls in my front yard and said, hey, this is what we want to do. And this is what we need to do because we don't know how long COVID is going to last. We need to start preparing for future problems within our own communities, within the country. We have to solve the issue. So while people were solving today, we were thinking down the road. We were thinking future. We were starting to plan our partnerships, our relationships, the supply chain. How do we support production for food to feed people? And so instead of building a supply chain for the restaurant, we said we needed to build a supply chain for the country. So how do we do that? And so we started purchasing from producers all over the country. We built Tokabe Indigenous Marketplace as an online resource to be a grocery store. So it's literally designed to be, because it's hard, you can't go all over and open an indigenous grocery store. Like it's not necessarily going to thrive. It's the reality of the world. And so, but online, we can open up the accessibility to millions of people. And so we want it, and we designed it to basically be like you're walking into a grocery store where you have your dry goods, you have your deli, you have, you know, your pantry, you have your butcher, you have all that stuff. And we're growing towards that. And so the Seed to Soul mission is, we purchase by the pallet load from all these producers all over the country. And then if it's a direct to consumer, you know, 1 pound bag of beans, you can buy that. If it's a bottle of honey, you can buy that. So we'll send it directly to your house. But at the same time, built into that, we buy wholesale. We buy 50 pound bags. So the restaurant purchases. So our GM and our production manager at our other facility, they buy the ingredients like any other food purveyor, and we deliver it to them. So they support the marketplace at the same time. So it's, again, it's all the way back to the beginning is how do we build upon the food system and how do we find all these avenues to get the ingredients to anyone? So again, you can buy dry goods, build your indigenous pantry, or you come to the restaurant and we're the biggest purchaser of products in the marketplace. So the Seed to Soul is the marketplace. Like that's what it is.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So the Direct to Try program takes into consideration specific dietary needs of the Native Americans. That's something a lot of food programs don't do, correct? And what does that exactly entail?
So Direct to Tribe is directly correlated with Direct to Consumer, obviously, very clear. Like we have Direct to Consumer, but then we have Direct to Tribe side. So again, it's down to everything we do. So I'll say this quickly. Is that when the restaurant started, a good friend of ours coined it as a community-driven experience. Because for me, when we were developing that, I can share my experience as a Native man and as an Osage, and that's my experience. But for us to do a Native restaurant, we have to have a lot of people's voices. And so what we wanted to do, I jokingly say, it's like a teenager's bedroom. You never know what's going to go on the walls, new posters, new stickers, whatever it is. That's what the restaurant design is. People providing feedback and what is native identity and how do we share that? So that's always been important, feeding the community, but feeding the broader population. So when we started the marketplace, we wanted to do the direct to consumer, but it was very important for me specifically as we feed our community at the same time. So we have direct to consumer and we have direct to tribe. Now, what that is making sure that as we grow, we never forget about where we come from and the people that we support and the people that are in need of not only food, but meaningful, thoughtful food that's will be nutrient dense, all those buzzy things, but I don't mean that, but also be culturally gratifying. So when a lot of communities, when people are have a gap, I don't like to say communities in need, but people have a gap in what they need. Well, I guess what is missing within their community, it's fulfilled with a lot of times just garbage. And I'm not talking poorly in any way. I'm just saying like larger corporations and things like that will put things into communities, but it's not necessarily meaningful and thoughtful for what the people need. It's just like, here you go. And so for us, for Direct to Tribe, is like very meaningful food into a community. So we do these frozen prepared meals. Again, I jokingly call it a native lean cuisine so that people understand what it is. But it's an oven or microwave ready meal from ingredients that we get from the marketplace. Our team produces those. And then they're frozen, sealed, and then we ship them to communities and they give them out for free. So not only are you feeding people, but you're feeding people food that they're connected to and feeding people food that's meaningful. Because for me, I never want anything to be considered it's a handout, but if you're supporting someone, it needs to be a thoughtful reason why. And then last thing I'll say, as I told you, I can get on a soapbox, is that one thing that's incredibly important to us, and it happens a lot in the native world, there's a program, a government program. It's essential. I will say that it puts food into communities. It's called the Food Distribution Program on Indian Reservations. It's a commodity program. It's incredibly important. It has to feed people. But there's a lot of times that's mocked and joked about. And what bothers me about that is if you mock and make fun of the food that people have access to, especially kids, they are more prone to eat the things we tell them not to eat, like mm-hmm. Doritos and potato mm-hmm. chips and all mm-hmm. these other things, because you will not be mocked for that, but you'll be mocked for getting commodity foods. So our big thing is like, how do we make sure that we feed people, put things in the community that's meaningful and make people proud of like, yes, like this is who I am. And I have food that's for me, by me, and made specifically for my people.
Yeah, it's great. That's awesome. Again, you have a lot of things going on and a lot of passion. It's fantastic. The main protein on your menu you said is bison. How do you describe bison? For someone who unfortunately have had it, for people that haven't had it, how would you describe it?
I always like to start with it's familiar, because people are always worried. I'm sure you're very familiar. You said you eat a lot of elk. People are like, is it gamey? Is it this? Yeah. And that? And a lot of times I wonder, do people even know what gamey actually means or like what it tastes like? I say it to people all the time. It's familiar. It has to me a much richer flavor than a beef would, because if you want to relate it to a beef, which most people do, obviously very lean, things like that. But I think it just has a rounder, richer flavor to it. I think it has a better palate to it. And this goes from like, I cook everything from a grind buffalo to a rib to insides, clods, briskets, ribeye, like you name it, we cook the animal. But I think I always want people to know, like, don't be afraid and don't think it's something so unfamiliar to you. Once you have it, you will realize that it's something that you will enjoy and something that is very much like, oh, okay, like there's nothing to be afraid of here. But to me, that's what I enjoy. And then also what I like to point out is that, so we make our own bison stock. And to me, just the depth of flavor that bison stock has. So we do a kind of a little different. So we'll do bone sometimes, but we do it from the actual protein of the meat, how we cook it. So it just has this like super deep, rich flavor where, like, to me, I hate to say this, but I'm not the best with words, but like when you taste it, it's like this is the cleanest, like healthiest flavored broth that I could have. You know what I mean? Like obviously I eat bison all the time. Yeah. So I love it. But I want people to know, it's like, you will not be freaked out when you have it. I could trick you and say this was beef and you would eat and be like, oh, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly. And it's funny. Like I do enjoy hunting with a bow and very fortunate to always have elk meat on hand. You know, and deer and I always say this, you know, I make sure that anything I ever hunt, is eaten always 100%. I don't love deer meat. I don't love it. I make sure it's eaten. I eat it, but I don't love it. Elk, bison. I don't hunt bison, but I've had phenomenal. I mean, just absolutely clean, no fat, super healthy. The worst part about those is, it's really good to go to a place like yours because you know how to make it. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. a lot of times people get it and they think they have to kill it twice. And so they overcook it. And it just, you know, that's when you ruin it, or you over season it or over whatever it to just make somehow do to take the, like you said, the gaminess out. And it's not there. It's not there. It's absolutely.
Yeah. Fine. Well, and when a protein has gaminess, it should have that. Like when you cook it out, you're like, you're not cooking. Like it's a part of who it is. It's especially for, if we're talking about bison are, they're semi-wild basically, you know, so it's, they're athletes, like a deer, like an mm-hmm. elk, like they are athletes. And so what you're getting is the flavor of the natural animal. You should, like, if you want to cook something out, then don't even eat it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Eat something else, but that's a part of what it is. And, you know, for us, I've had everything from like only fed or only ate off like virgin prairie grass its entire life to something that's finished on grain. They're all great. Yeah. You know, they are, and you do get a different flavor. Yeah. It's actually interesting.
There's no question.
The more you have, you can get a different flavor profile dependent upon the region that the animal also grew up in. It's very like, and again, it's probably just because I've eaten so much that you can really start to say, like, I can tell if this was only grass fed. I can tell if this was finished on something else. I can tell, you know, if this, how old this animal was. It's, you know, you just start to build a palate for what the animal provides you. And we're very specific on how we approach our buffalo usage and how we source our buffalo as well. It's very specific to us also.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the old saying is you are what you eat. The animals are the same. I mean, there's a big difference in my mind for an elk that was maybe harvested in New Mexico and eating sage versus one that was harvested in Colorado eating grass and, you know, a different taste profile and everything else. But like you said, they're all delicious, all delicious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's fair to say that Native American restaurants are still in the early stages of growth. Do you see an opportunity for rapid growth? I mean, do you think there's an opportunity here for this to turn into, I'll say, a big brand?
I think that there's an opportunity. Yeah. I mean, I think that we're on the verge of trying to go that route. I mean, there's people that are popping up around doing similar styles of concept, just meeting in the counter service fast casual model. And then there's people doing more finer dining kind of plated, and there's room for everybody. Rapid is a difficult question, because what is rapid for us? And the reason that I say that that's hard is I think to do it right, it's an approach to what we're trying to do and other restaurateurs are trying to do is, you know, you need to be specific in how you tell the story of this food, because people want it. That's why, like, when people come in, we have, again, for years, who owns this place? Mm-hmm. Is it native owned? Where do you source your food? Like, people want to know now. They don't want the wool pulled over their eyes of it's just someone opening a native restaurant. And a concern that I have is that that will happen. And look, I'm not opposed to people having restaurants from different cultures and communities. You can be from here and open an amazing Japanese restaurant if you have that experience. The reason that it's more concerning to me now is that those types of cuisines are further down the road of development. Mm-hmm. Where right now we're still in the development of our cuisine in the broader culinary experience. And it's happened in the past that I don't want to happen now, that we need to create and be the trendsetters of our food. Because if people see it's cool and it's buzzy and it's native, they're going to open it. And then it starts to tell the story again from someone other's voice, which is what happened to many diverse communities, is other people have told their stories. So my point is, yes, I believe that it can happen. I think that it will happen. How big could it be? 50 units, 200 units? I don't know. But I believe also for what we do is that it's, again, it's familiar because it's ingredients that people understand. Corns, beans, squash, bison, deer, elk, like all those things, salmon, walleye, all these things people are generally familiar with in America. And it's like, I'm not afraid of that. You know, like, okay, I get it. I'll try it. So I think that once it starts to expand, most of Americans' palates understand it. And two, it's food that's familiar and won't freak them out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody has been expanding their palates. It's been a thing over the last, you know, 5-10 years. I mean, it's been exacerbated over the last 5-10 years where people are just willing to try new flavors, new textures, new types of food, new dishes and nationalities, recipes. So, I mean, you're very, very, very on trend, especially the way you're sourcing and the story behind it. It's just wonderful. So, like, I have two final questions for you. Like, what's next for you? Anything close on the horizon? Anything that you're up to that you'd like to talk about?
I mean, I think the big thing for us is, you know, we're just continuing to expand our partnerships and bringing in other ingredients and really trying to expand the work that we do in the marketplace. Because again, in order to have a market, you need to have all varieties of things and starting to have actually the hardest ones for us have been, you know, having protein specific partnerships. So bringing that kind of stuff. And so we're really excited about that in our expansion there of just because it's really important to me to have partnership building. That's what's really fun for me is I travel all over the country now. And I meet our producers. I talk to our producers. I know them by name and go hang out and make sure that we mesh on vibe. And what's really cool also is, you know, we work everywhere from a husband and wife that grow a traditional Navajo corn that they want to go to market with, but they don't know how. And this is where like the entrepreneurial thing and me being young and inexperienced when we opened, you know, we were 25 when we opened, where I could sit down and be like, get super into it. And what do you want to do? How to help kind of build their, you know, quote unquote brand. So from a mom and pop husband and wife that want to grow their corn and help, and that's what they want to do for a living with their family. We get to help that all the way from a multi-million-dollar tribal entity that has one of the most sophisticated olive presses in America. I get to work with them. So everything along the way, it's really fun for me. It's so educational for me. And it further root, oh God, so many puns. I don't even mean to like root myself in the community. So that's really important. And then the last thing on that I'm super excited about is, and it goes to what I was saying is, you know, not forgetting about people in the community. And if you don't mind, I'll give you one quick example. And why I'm excited about this is, so we provide on our Direct to Tribe program, we provide meals, 1,100 meals a month to Spirit Lake community in central North Dakota. Now, it's a very rural place. And to get there, when we're building logistics, people are like, well, we'll get to, you know, Fargo. And it's like, that's 2 hours away. So I would say that's like ordering something online and they'll say, well, we're going to drop it a mile from your house. You're like, no, I want it at my house.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had to solve the issues to get it to their door. Because if we're going to say we're going to feed people, we have to give it to you. We have to make it easy. Right. So we drop the food there. We drop multiple pallets for a few months. So we'll do that. But then on the way back down, we stop at Cheyenne River Buffalo Company. We'll buy and pick up 4,000 to 6,000 pounds of buffalo in one run and we'll bring it back down. So dropping food off, picking food up. So along the way, you know, we're passing through different communities, Rosebud, Pine Ridge, Standing Rock, Cheyenne River, you know, we're passing through those. So it's like, how do you feed people in the communities? And then how do you tell those people in the communities as you're continuing to grow and different products, whatever it is, will source from you? So I say that because we don't ever want anyone to feel left out. Bringing it back to what I said about the commodity packages, I'm really big on kids and we're making these incredible meals, but they're kind of designed for an adult palate. They're kind of designed for an adult meal, something they're more familiar with, wild rice, with roasted vegetables and braised bison, New Mexican red chili, all those things. It's more adult. So profile. So we have like kid-specific meals that we've developed that we're putting out that are like familiar to kids. They'll see and they're like, oh, I like that. I get that. And it's really just starting to help them train their taste buds to enjoy foods first and foremost, enjoy food, but then also start to train their taste buds for traditional foods that are in there. So like, that's something I'm so excited about is not missing kids in the system. Just like we're not missing communities. We're not going to miss kids. We're not going to wait until you're 14 and 15 to feed you. We're going to start you at 4 and 5 years old into these meals. So like, that's something I'm super excited about. And from a, you know, from a culinary perspective, it's so creative to try and think about how are we going to give something to a kid that they're familiar with and how can we hide in ingredients. So those are things we're super, super excited about. That's what I'm excited about, you know, as we move forward.
Cool, man. You're like a serial entrepreneur. You got more things going on and it's awesome. It's very, very, very cool. I love your passion and your energy. It's fantastic. Okay, so I have one last question. And since I ask this of everyone, but I'm sure you're going to have a great answer for this. If you could have one final meal, what would you have, where, and why?
Oh, my gosh. So this is probably like the worst answer ever. So I've been asked so many times, like, what's the best meal you've ever had in your life? And I have had everything from a bowl of beans and rice in a little place in South Africa to sitting on the side of a road in Vietnam, all the way to like a Michelin restaurant. Like, I've had everything in between. And I don't mean this to be corny in any way. They were all amazing. But like, to me, the best meal is like, if I get the choice of my final meal, like, I want to be with my kids. Like, I want to be with my kids, my wife, hanging out, because to me, the experience of food is just as important as being mind blown. I've had some mediocre meals in my life, but I was absolutely blown away by the experience. And to me, looking back, it far surpassed some of the most elegant meals I've ever had in my life. So there's that. Where I would love to be somewhere in the woods at a cabin with fire going. Just because I'm in Colorado, I love that. I love being around wood burning, cooking there. So something boiling away over wood, sitting down with my family. I would top it off. This is so ridiculous. I would top it off with vanilla ice cream, more peanuts than anyone should ever eat in one sitting, and really high quality chocolate syrup.
Oh, there you go.
That's how I would finish.
Now, you know, that's the only food you're talking about.
And then you can throw me in the soil.
You talked about your family. You talked about the Colorado, the fire. The only food you mentioned was vanilla ice cream.
That's what I'm saying. That's what's so ridiculous, because food is so hard for me to define what I love.
Yeah.
But like, that's something we have a sign in our house that said, all you need is love and maybe a little ice cream. Yeah. So if that tells you why, we top it off there. But you know, it's something that, it is so experiential, and I have so many favorites in my life. It's really hard to – I've had that conversation. It's like, it's really hard to say, like, this is the last meal I'd ever have. But if I had the option of a last meal, I at least would be able to choose who and where I am. That, to me, is more important than what I actually would eat.
That's excellent. Excellent. Well, hey, Ben, this is fantastic. And I want to say congratulations, not on your just on your business, which is phenomenal, but just really what your outlook and your mission. I mean, attitude and your outlook and the mission you have is just fantastic. It's a wonderful story, and it's something to be very proud of. So congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time. It's always really exciting for people to find out about what we do and be, you know, genuinely interested and engaged. Because, again, for us to continue – you know, when we first started, it was, we don't want to have a job. We want to have a career. We don't want to have a checklist. We want to have, you know, generational things to work on. And so, you know, it's really exciting that people like yourself see what we're doing, get engaged, because it just provides us the opportunity to continue doing the things that we love and we're super passionate. I get to wake up every morning and I always say, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do today, but I know I'm going to do something exciting that I'm passionate about, and it's going to be fun no matter what. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. It's been an honor.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Take care.
Thank you.